Good morning. It's 8:04, and you're listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and we are on the line with Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch. Dan, thank you so much for getting up early and being with us today.
Thanks, Lisa. Good morning.
Good morning. And today is a milestone in Portland history, a modest milestone, possibly. Portland Police Chief fires Officer Ron Freshour in the Aaron Campbell shooting. Of course, I think it looks as though Officer Ron Freshour has not exhausted all of his potentialities for keeping his job. I think that he still can file a grievance with his union to get to keep his job, and maybe also potentially after that, can he go to a state arbitrator? I'm not sure. But anyway, I wanted to bring Dan Handelman on the air because tonight, the Albina Ministerial Alliance ad hoc Coalition for Community Justice is having a prayer vigil for justice for Aaron Campbell, and that's at 6 p.m. at the Northeast Precinct. That's at 449 Northeast Emerson. Dan, can you talk a little bit about this event tonight? What's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think that people are going to acknowledge the discipline that's been handed down, not only to Officer Freshour, who fired the fatal shot into Aaron Campbell's back in January, but to Officer Luton, who fired the beanbag gun that set the action in motion that caused Freshour to shoot Campbell, and the two sergeants who are also receiving discipline for their failure to appropriately supervise the scene. And part of that acknowledgement is also going to be an urging of the police to do more. Not, you know, just firing one guy and disciplining these three others is not going to take away the institutional problems that still exist, the longer term problems, and the longer-term issues of trying to create training and policy that will prevent this from happening in the future. So I think all of that's going to be wrapped up into this candlelight vigil at 6 o'clock tonight.
At Northeast Precinct, that's at, it's basically right at the corner of Killingsworth and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And I want to encourage people to go out there tonight. But actually, it was funny, Dan, a small flurry of things came out of the Portland Police Department yesterday. The official, the disciplinary process against this handful of officers involved in the killing of Aaron Campbell was one. And then very few minutes later, the police chief, Mike Reese, released a statement about the disciplinary process against Commander Krueger, who some people refer to as, quote, the Nazi commander of the Portland Police Department, who had basically put up plaques commemorating five Waffen SS officers some years ago on a tree in Forest Park, and was an avowed Nazi World War II style reenactment guy. So the police department basically gave him, I want to say, 2 weeks suspension without pay, and he officially apologized. That happened yesterday. And then yesterday afternoon, an hour or so after that, the Police Bureau Public Information Officers released a press release about two separate DUI incidents of Portland police officers. They were not DUI on duty, but they were cited for DUI off duty. So, Dan, I mean, I sit in a flow in my day job where I get press releases all day, and I've never had a day when all these kinds of duty, as we say, duty, well, all these pronouncements about discipline and gotcha stuff around cops all came down at the same time. And I feel as though I talked to you about this yesterday, and you were pretty surprised too. It was boom, 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 all these different things coming down. What do you think is going on? Do you think it's like a PR house cleaning thing going on over there?
Well, it's very interesting. I think that the thing with the DUI is a timing coincidence. I think that there may be a strategic reason why Chief Reese released the information about Captain Krueger on the same day he released the information about the two sergeants and the two officers in the Aaron Campbell shooting. And the reason I say that is the union is trying to point out the captain, who's now the commander of training.
Yeah, commander. He got a promotion, yeah.
Captain Day showed up on the scene of the Aaron Campbell shooting to get debriefed, and he didn't have a bulletproof vest on, which, in my mind, so there was no gun. Aaron Campbell wasn't threatening to come and shoot police officers with his gun, so I don't see why it was a big deal. He didn't have his bulletproof vest on. In any case, so he called Sergeant Reyna, who had taken control of the scene, to come debrief him away from the scene. My opinion is, at that point, she could have said, well, you know what, Captain, this is not a good time. We're on the phone with this guy. He's about to come out of his apartment. I can't really leave my post right now. But instead, what she did was she left her post, didn't tell anybody what the plan was, or leave anybody in charge of the arrest team, which includes the sharpshooter and the beanbag guy. And so there was nobody to give them orders or give them a tactical plan. And that's why she's being disciplined. I think that he was trying to show that they're disciplining people higher up in the food chain as well. And since Kruger is a captain, he's just trying to say, oh, I'm not just going after the people low down on the totem pole.
That's so interesting when you look at how these cases are linked. But I guess Portland is a really small town, and the police bureau is actually a relatively small police bureau, relatively speaking. But I want to back up for a quick second and say, for people that are not familiar with this case, you know, there's a big movement going back decades now of police accountability in Portland. Again, a very small town, really. It thinks it's a big city, but it's not. And this issue here of the Portland police firing Officer Ronald Freshour yesterday for his role in shooting depressed, suicidal, unarmed man to death. He shot him in the back on January 29th of this year, the man, Aaron Campbell. This is a momentous episode because Freshour's firing, I believe this is only the second time that a Portland police officer has ever been fired for killing someone in the line of duty. And the last guy who was fired, I want to say Lieutenant Kerr, he was fired for killing also an unarmed man who he believed was going to run over him with his car in the middle of the night. That officer being in the wrong precinct, in the wrong circumstances, he shouldn't have even been where he was. And he was found to have violated, I think at the time, current policy about shooting at vehicles. But anyway, if Freshour's firing stays, as Kerr's did not, Kerr was able to basically get reinstated in his job through a state arbitration process, right? So Ronald Freshour, if he remains permanently fired by the Portland police, this will be the first time ever that any officer, as far as we know, has ever been actually fired for killing someone in the line of duty. And how many people, Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch, your organization keeps statistics, you keep track of these cases going back to, I think, 1992 or 93. How many people have been killed by the Portland police, just rough estimate, in the time that your organization's been keeping statistics?
I think it's been somewhere around 50 people. I think there have been somewhere around 100 shootings and 50 deaths. I'd have to double check the statistics on that. But
how many Portland police have been killed in the line of duty?
I think three.
Okay. All right.
In that time period, and they were all within a year of each other. It's not a war, though. I mean, we don't want anybody to be killed at Portland Cop Watch.
No, we don't.
And certainly, other officers have been shot at and had other things happen to them. But again, it's not the point, except that the excuse that police use for shooting somebody is that they feel that their life or somebody else's life is in danger. And the reality is that doesn't happen very often. It happens very, very infinitesimally, small number of times. And the fact that there have been 50 shootings just in the last 10 years says that the police are kind of a little on edge and too fearful of their community they're supposed to serve and protect. So the good thing about this, and you're saying this is the first time and again, you mentioned Lieutenant Kerr actually in 93.
It's potentially the first time.
Right. Well, no, what I'm saying is, too, in 1993, a man was shot in the back and lived. He didn't get killed. An officer was fired. It was Officer Douglas Erickson, and the man's name was Gerald Gretton. And that officer was also reinstated after arbitration. But the fact is that Chief Reese, for what it's worth, has been much more open and transparent about stuff. He's released all this documentation, and we had to wait over 3 years to get this kind of documentation about James Chassie being beaten to death in 2006. That documentation just came out in the last couple of months, and yet he released all this documentation about the Aaron Campbell shooting right after they made the internal affairs decision, which actually also that process took a lot faster. It's only been about 8 months 9 months since Aaron Kimball was shot, and they finished the whole internal investigation and the discipline process, which is, it's also a sign of something new at the Bureau.
Yeah, and just I just want to jump in there and say it was yesterday that Chief Reese and Mayor Sam Adams released the disciplinary documentation around the and announced that they had officially fired Officer Ronald Freshour and disciplined, I want to say, three other people in the killing of Aaron Kimball, which occurred January 29th. And you can go to portlandonline.com, find the Police Bureau webpage, and in the right-hand corner, there's a series of links, and there's something, there's a link that says something like Chief Reese statement on Aaron Kimball case or something like that. The documents, there's hundreds of pages of documents that they released yesterday. It includes the internal affairs investigation. It's a 132-page document. That is a darn fascinating read. I'm putting that out. And the discipline letters that were written to all these people, Ronald Freshour, Officer Ryan Luton, the guy that fired the beanbag rounds, and Sergeants Leonie Reyna and John Birkenbein, who all got, let's be clear, they all got 80 hours of unpaid suspension. So you can read the disciplinary letters, the internal affairs investigation notes. There's pictures of the crime, I'm calling it a crime scene, pictures of the weapons, although these documents are so big that I haven't been able to open the so-called photographs of the weapons, but it is a pretty fascinating read. And actually, Chief Reese came out and said that he wants everyone in Portland to go and read those documents because he wants people to be clear about why the decisions were made. And that's kind of what, that's what Dan Handelman, that's what other people are saying. That is a big, significant breakthrough in the police accountability movement as it has been waged, you know, for this past 20 years. But yeah, you are also talking, Dan, what are the other important issues here about what happened yesterday, the announcement and all these hundreds of pages of documents that were released?
Well, to me, the juiciest read, to borrow a phrase from you, is the discipline letters, because they talk about the officers' past history of what they've done and been disciplined for, which is usually something they say is a private personnel matter and we can't know about it. And one of the reasons I think that I'm hopeful that this firing might stick, and as you said, Police Association has already announced their intention to file a grievance about this firing, which if the next logical step then is it goes to an arbitrator, and the arbitrator decides whether or not it was the appropriate discipline. And for years, the reason they haven't been able to fire officers for this is that they've never done it before. So we're in this endless loop where they've never fired somebody for shooting someone, and so therefore they can't fire somebody for shooting someone.
But they fire people for doing other things.
I know, for lying, stealing, cheating, and for sexual misconduct, but never for on-duty use of force. It never happens, and it never sticks. But let me just say what the history of this particular officer, Freshour, I think will make this stick, and here's why. In 2006, he was part of a group of officers who chased a man who they thought was a jaywalker onto an auto body yard, and they found a guy they thought was the jaywalker who was videotaping them rummaging about in the auto body yard. The man's name was Frank Waterhouse. And Freshour and another officer started barking commands at him to put down the camcorder as though it was a weapon of some kind.
All on videotape, too.
And, yeah, and you can see this on YouTube. And he said, "It's not me. I'm not the guy you're looking for. I've been standing here the whole time." And they simultaneously shoot him with a beanbag gun and a taser. And Officer Freshour shot him with a taser. And earlier this year, in February of this year, our Citizen Review Board, such as it is, the Citizen Review Committee, found him out of policy for using that taser, even though the Bureau had said, well, maybe he's out of policy, maybe not, we really can't say. And they said, yes, he was. And the chief of police at that time, Rosie Sizer, agreed with them. So Freshour was disciplined for basically making the irrational decision to shoot this taser at this guy who wasn't posing a threat. Mm. Okay. Then in 2008, and this story I just found out about, and this is why these documents are so interesting.
This is one of the secret things that Freshour had done that we didn't know before, but go
exactly.
ahead. It's fun.
He was supposed to be, he heard another call where an officer had smashed into a red car that was driving recklessly. And so he's driving around and he saw a silver car of the same make and model with a dent in it. And he thought it was the same person, even though the license plate was totally different and the color was different. So seeing this car with a dent in it, he went up to it and smashed into it with his police car and caused an injury and damaged the car. And it was a completely innocent person.
I want to read that passage because it's just so fun and literary. Yeah. I have it right here in front of me.
Yeah.
This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're on the phone with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch. We're talking about the Portland Police Bureau firing of Officer Ronald Freshour. Yesterday they made it official, although he definitely has the opportunity to still be reinstated. But he was fired for the fatal shooting of Aaron Campbell on January 29th. And tonight there's a prayer vigil for justice on the Aaron Campbell case. It starts at 6 p.m. at the Northeast Precinct. That's at 449 Northeast Emerson Street. That's at the corner of Killingsworth and Martin Luther King Boulevard. But I just want to read this from the disciplinary letters because the language of it is so fun. And you can read this yourself online at portlandonline.com. Go to the Portland Police page. Anyway, it says, and this is written to Officer Freshour, all the officers had to sign off on their own disciplinary letters, and you can see their signatures. In mid-August 2008, you responded to assist another officer who had just performed a pursuit intervention technique, PIT, on a reckless driver. The description of the vehicle driven by the reckless driver was red Honda Accord. You observed a silver Honda with a different plate and damage. You did not verify the description of the suspect vehicle. Thinking it was the reckless driver, you performed a PIT on the silver Honda. The silver Honda was being driven by an innocent person, not the reckless driver. This incident resulted in physical damage and injury. Your application of the PIT was found to be out of policy and lacking probable cause, and in violation of Directive 315.30, unsatisfactory performance. You received command counseling for this on October 24th, 2008. And again, I mean, this is an incident around Officer Freshour, who multiple people have been, an organization has been formed called Fire Freshour, just to get this guy fired. And he's also, I think, Dan, he's triggered two other lawsuits regarding his use of force in someone's home on a domestic violence or an alleged domestic violence incident a year or two ago, as well as Aaron Campbell's family in, I think it was in October, filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the city?
Right. I think it was just about a week and a half ago, actually.
Right, right.
And, there was a woman who got doused with pepper spray by Officer Freshour. That's the claim in the lawsuit, when he came to try to allegedly protect her in a domestic violence situation. Somehow she ended up getting doused from head to toe with pepper spray, according to her complaint.
Mm.
So, this guy sounds like he's reckless. Sounds like he doesn't have control over his use of weapons, and I think we'll be better off without him. Now, that said, as I mentioned before, I think we at Portland Cop Watch were really hoping that whatever punishment happened to Officer Freshour would also happen to Officer Luton. Because Aaron Campbell had come out of his apartment after talking on the phone with a hostage negotiator, and he had his hands interlaced behind his head, and he was walking backwards toward them. They yelled at him to stop, and he stopped, and they started yelling, "Put your hands in the air, put your hands in the air." And it's like there was no particular reason for them to do that because they could already see his hands. There's not like he was holding a gun up against his head behind his clasped hands. The officer who had the beanbag gun just said, "Well, I wanted him to comply with my command, so I shot at him." And that's not what you're allowed to use a beanbag gun for. It's a less lethal, they call it less lethal. They're not beans either. They're lead pellets in a nylon sack, and it hurts like, I don't want to say what on the air, but it's like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball hitting you. And so they shot him at his lower back, perhaps even lower than his lower back, and Aaron Campbell moved his hands down because he felt pain. And when he moved his hand down, Officer Freshour thought he was going for a gun, and that's why he ended up dead. So it seems to me that Luton is just as responsible as Freshour for the immediate circumstance of death. And the two sergeants are a different story. Sergeant Reyna, as I said, left the scene without leaving anybody in charge, and Sergeant Birkenbein, who's the fourth person who got disciplined, after Reyna left the scene, he ordered the guy who was negotiating with Aaron Campbell to ask him to come outside, which was nobody else in the whole tactical team knew this was going to happen. And so he didn't communicate this plan to anybody that this guy might be coming out of the apartment, which led to the confusion and to Aaron Campbell dying. So that's why he's getting an 80-hour suspension as well.
Interesting. Again, this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. You know, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. I've been chatting with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch about this completely fascinating documentation that the Portland Police released yesterday online regarding the firing that was officially announced yesterday of Officer Ronald Frashauer, who shot an unarmed, suicidally depressed man in the back and killed him January 29th. If you want to join in this conversation, the number to call is 503-231-8187. I could talk to Dan all day. Someday, maybe I'll talk to Dan all day. But Dan, again, to me, the minutia of the stories of the things that Frashauer told the Internal Affairs Division is completely fascinating. And when people go to PortlandOnline.com and they find the Portland Police Bureau webpage and look in the right-hand corner and look for the link that says, I think it says something like, police...
They actually have a link right on the front page that says Aaron Campbell documents.
Fantastic. Right. And so one of the things that really strikes me about the Internal Affairs... I don't know if anybody's ever released Internal Affairs documents like this. I don't know if I've ever seen them. And it's true that in the past year, the police department has done what we call document dumps of 600 pages, 500-page documents, and a number of police shootings. Keaton Dupree Otis, which happened this past spring, and they did the same thing in February with the Aaron Campbell shooting. I don't know if you remember at the time, listeners, but that case went before a grand jury, and the grand jury itself was so horrified at what happened that they publicly released a statement which was relatively unprecedented, not completely unprecedented, and they basically begged the city to release some of these documents about the Aaron Campbell shooting. But one of the things that's amazing is that this is from the disciplinary letters on Frashauer. Basically, the Internal Affairs people interviewed him, and they asked him why he shot Frashauer. And his response was, I mean, it was dumb, and it was shocking, and it does reflect very badly on law enforcement, per se. But one of the things that, okay, in the disciplinary letters, it says, you know, and again, this is a letter written to Frashauer. Your answers to Internal Affairs investigator questions are troubling. You indicated... When you were asked whether it would have made a difference to you if you had known that Campbell was coming out at the request of one of the officers on the scene, you said, I guess it would have shown some compliance on his part, and I would have registered that as some compliance on his part. It wouldn't have affected the end result, I could tell you that. In other words, if he had known that Campbell was turning himself in, he would have still shot him in the back, seems to be the implication from this document. And the internal affairs investigations from him are even more damning. And you can read those yourself on PortlandOnline.com.
I think that point you made is where I think I want to talk to you again about Captain Krueger, because there is the subtlety of, I would have shot him anyway, that Aaron Campbell's a black man, and Officer Frashauer, like most of the Portland Police Bureau, is a white man. And there's been an undertone of racial tension or racial bias in this whole case. And I tell you, I studied these 50 shootings that happened in the last decade. 26% of those shootings are African Americans. Our city is 6% black. There's something going on here where black people are getting shot at more often by the police. And is this guy got something going on in his head, Mr. Frashauer? So Krueger, it's alleged, has, you know, he used to go around town with this fellow neo-Nazi yelling stuff about African-Americans and other people out the windows of their car. And then as you said, he went into this public park and nailed up a tribute to five soldiers from
the Waffen-SS.
They weren't all in the SS.
Okay.
Just to be fair, they were all in the German military. One of them was in Waffen-SS and committed war crime atrocities. And he says he's a student of history, and yet that he didn't know that. And he didn't know that this guy was loyal to the Nazi party, even though he's in the SS, which means that either he's an idiot or he's a liar. So he, in his apology letter, he said something about like thinking that what Nazis believe in is despicable, but he didn't really enumerate what it was that they believed in that he finds despicable. And what I'm worried about, and what I think other people in the community might be worried about, is that there might be more going on here. The good thing about Captain Krueger's discipline is that he's being required to go to tolerance training which hopefully will make a difference to him in some way. And then they're gonna force him to mentor somebody, which makes me a little nervous. You take somebody who's this guy who dressed up in a Nazi uniform and reenacted history, and then nailed up this honoring plaque in a city park, and he's going to mentor young kids. I'm a little worried about that.
Mm. And there is more to know about the involvement of KBOO's hippie lawyer, Alan Graf, in that story. And we're not prepared to go into all that history today. But I do want to say that if you want to, the police also yesterday released all the records, the disciplinary letter, and I think there was another record, I forgot what it was, plus the public apology by Commander Kruger yesterday, and you can find that on PortlandOnline.com as well.
Just to be clear, he's a captain, which is one level below commander.
I thought he was promoted to commander.
It's possible. I hadn't heard about that.
Okay, we need a listener to go online to Portland Online and find that document and let us know. Is Mark Kruger a commander or is he a captain? And these things do matter, actually, and especially within law enforcement. People guard their rank jealously. So the number to call, this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. We're talking about the Portland Police firing of Officer Ronald Freshour, made official yesterday. He was fired for killing Aaron Campbell on January 29th. The number to call to participate in this conversation is 503-231-8187. And we have Joanne on the line. Joanne, what do you think?
Howdy. You know, I'm glad that you folks doing this dangerous work are finally getting some reward. I wonder, Dan, if maybe you'll be writing a book in the future talking about your and others' work with, and then hopefully if you do, that it gets taught in the school system. And I want to say one thing in my behalf. You know, I've been living in these housing authority buildings and complaining and whistleblowing off and on. I've been getting harassed and nobody helps me with it. So I'm just wondering, in this dangerous work you're doing, Dan, I guess you don't get harassed, and I don't want you to, but maybe you have been, but I find it very interesting. Goodbye.
Thanks. Joanne's right in a lot of ways, Dan. Have you ever thought about putting together some sort of publication? And
Do you get pushback?
Do you get harassed?
I get harassed in the sense that a lot of cops know who I am, and I have no idea who they are. So they'll come up to me and go, "Hey, Dan," and I think it's kind of there letting me know that they know who I am. But it's nothing more serious than that, thankfully. The book idea, I don't know. Maybe somebody wants to compile all the issues of the People's Police Report together. But we do a publication 3 times a year at Portland Cop Watch. You can find it on our website, portlandcopwatch.org. It's called the People's Police Report. Not all the issues are up there, but most of them are, and it goes back till we started publishing it in late '93, and basically it's a history of the last 17 years of what we've been doing and what the police have been doing, really. And Doug Lucerican, that guy I talked about who shot Gerald Grattan in the back, he's in there on one of the early issues, and through Kendra James and Jose Mejia Poet and of course, James Chassie, and up to and including Keith Notice and Aaron Campbell and Jack Collins, were all shot this year.
Right. And another thing that I think that people, it would be, if it's worthwhile to go to portlandcopwatch.org right now, because they've updated, Dan and his cadre of compatriots have updated the list of Portland police shootings and in-custody deaths through May of this year, and it's worth taking a look at.
Yeah, so just so you know, I pulled up the discipline letter on the computer I've got going here, and it's Captain Mark Kruger's a captain.
Okay, good, good, good. That's good to know. Okay, Captain Mark Kruger.
Out at East Precinct if anybody wants to stay away from him.
Okay, and this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch. We're talking about the Portland Police official announcement yesterday of the firing of Officer Ron Freshour, who shot unarmed Aaron Campbell in the back and killed him January 29th. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. And we have another caller. I'm sorry, the name again is Pear. Oh, Pear's on the line.
Hey, good morning.
Pear's going to be talking with Cynthia McKinney tomorrow morning on Fight the Empire, and that's going to be juicy.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, if Kruger wants to do more of these reenactments, I know some people, if they'll give us Red Army uniforms, we'll do the Battle of Berlin.
Oh, my God. Pear. taxpayer. No.
It might be fun.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks, Per.
Of course. Again, Portland Cop Watch is from a nonviolent organization, and we don't advocate for anything like that. But let me say that there's a couple other things happening in the next few days around police stuff, just in the next few days and then in the coming weeks. So I just wanted to let the community know about some of them. For instance, in addition to the 6 o'clock vigil tonight at Northeast Precinct that the Coalition for Justice and Police Reform is putting on, there is a meeting at 4:30 of the Community Police Relations Committee, which has, as its title suggests, has members of the community and members of the police sit together around the table and talk about supposedly racial profiling and other issues of concern. Tonight, they're getting a presentation about the use of force policy that the Bureau is using now. And so people who haven't had that background, I've heard this talk twice now myself, but it'll be interesting to be there and hear it. It comes from the city attorney and to see how the members of this board react to it. It's at 4:30 tonight at the PCC Training Center at 5600 Northeast 42nd, Building 2. But, of course, you have to leave that early if you're going to go to the vigil at 6 because that meeting goes till 6:30.
But that's not so far away.
Not very far away.
Okay.
And then on Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the city is, and again, this might have something to do with the timing of this announcement about Frash Hour, that Thursday at 3 o'clock, they're hearing new legislation for controlling gun crimes in Portland. And I think that they wanted to get a buy-off from people in the African-American community on this because there is a lot of so-called gang violence, people shooting each other, civilians shooting each other in the African-American community, whether or not they're actually in gangs or whatever they're saying. And their solution to this is to create more laws, which will just create more criminal.
Yeah, they're federalizing. They're federalizing the state, some of these state laws instead of, that's my read on it, as opposed to, I think that Adams got smacked down when he was proposing that they should create new laws, but
right,
I think...
Right, but there are new laws, they're creating punishment for people who don't report if their gun is missing, and if they don't know what their serial number is on their own gun, and things like that. And again, we're nonviolent, and I wish that all the guns would go away on the planet with a wave of a hand, but I can't make that happen. But the other thing they're doing is creating new exclusion zones. And we've seen these exclusion zones before. The drug-free zones, the prostitution-free zones, they create an area of the city where they say you can't go because you did this or that. And in this case, the difference is that the person has to be convicted of a gun crime, and then they are going to be excluded from certain areas of the city.
Dan, I thought that years ago those were found to be unconstitutional. Am I misremembering?
No, they were not found to be unconstitutional. They were found... But Mayor Potter discovered that they were being used disproportionately against African Americans. 52% of the people who had been excluded were African Americans. So he's decided that he just wanted to dismantle them. There have been challenges that never quite got all the way up the chain of the courts to determine this constitutionality. But the point is, it's another exclusion zone, and it's going to target African Americans. And I think that the city's trying to hand out an olive branch to the African American community and say, okay, look, even if we end up racially profiling people and excluding them from these zones wrongfully, look what we just did. We fired this guy. So there could be some of that going on.
And just on the spur of the moment, I have to say as an observer that the mayor... I can't remember if it was Adams or Potter, put the Racial Profiling Study Committee into the Office of Human Rights, and it's really been buried in there.
Right, that's the meeting that's happening tonight.
And I know that the woman who runs that is very well-meaning, but I mean, I just never, ever, ever, ever hear people talking about it anymore. And certainly, it's for sure that people in North and Northeast Portland, people in Outer Northeast Portland, they don't take their concerns about racial profiling to that committee. They just don't. I think most people don't realize it exists at all. So I'm just putting that out. And we do have a bunch of callers. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have Joe on the line. What do you think about it all, Joe?
Well, you know, my point of the thing is, okay, you sit there and you say that you're going to fire the officer, right?
Right.
Then you got the union behind the officers. Wait a minute. Is not the officers paid by the taxpayer?
Yeah.
Then what gives them a right to belong to a union? that protects them from the taxpayer.
You're raising a question. Okay, go ahead.
It is a good and difficult question. In fact, this is the third, the fourth event that I was going to talk about coming up in the next few days, that the police association is going through their collective bargaining negotiations with the city of Portland, and they're starting again Friday morning at 9 a.m. in the Portland building. So if people want to observe those for the first time in history that we know of, these are open to the public, and I've been going and observing them. And the police association, we support people's right to collectively bargain, okay? I think the police association has the right to defend its members and to talk about the wages and the working conditions that they are living under, and whether or not they should be working more than 40 hours a week. All these things are things that the labor movement in this country has fought and died for many years. But when they start dictating public policy, that's what the problem is. And when they start defending people who do things that are indefensible, like shooting a man in the back who was unarmed, that's where they cross the line. Mm. So I think they have a right to have a union. I just think that the union picks the wrong battles a lot of the time. But they've been making demands about changing the structure of the internal police review board that decides on people's discipline and whether or not they violated policy by using deadly force. They're trying to get that change made as part of their negotiation. That's an example of what I'm saying, that they shouldn't have any right to dictate public policy through their collective bargaining.
And yet they do. My boss rails about that, about how, yeah. Anyway, Joe raises a super interesting point, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. Oh, we have another Joe. Joe, what do you think?
Hey, good morning. I've got a question to ask, and that has to do with what is the ratio of civilians killed by police to police killed by civilians? You know, I mean, how many are they killing of us versus how many are we killing of them, like, every year?
What's your take on that, Dan? It is an interesting question because...
We talked about that briefly before.
Yeah.
I have to say, one of the things that bugs me the most about police officers is they say what a dangerous job they have. But in fact, construction workers and other, people who do physical labor, coal miners, die at a higher rate than police officers do in this country every year. It's sort of a myth that the police like to perpetuate. It is true, though, that people don't go out of their way to try to shoot at a coal miner because they're a coal miner, whereas some people do shoot at police officers because they're police officers. But it's incredibly rare. More officers die in car accidents than die from being shot by suspects.
Yeah, and then we've seen that, actually. A couple of, at least one really beloved, cool officer that everybody loved, Officer Zalawi, he died in a car crash on his way to work some few years ago.
He was actually fixing his tire. He got hit by a truck by
right.
the road.
That's right. It is an interesting question, and on that issue too, there's a couple things about that issue, and we do have another caller here. Let's go to the other caller really quick. Josh is on the line. Josh, what's your take?
Yeah, I was wondering, this is all interesting and I appreciate the show, and I was wondering why information that Dan Hanlon might have can't be put on a monthly show on KBOO. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Dan, don't you do TV?
Well, I'm with a group called Flying Focus Video Collective, but we don't cover police accountability as often as I'd like to. So I'm a guest on KBOO pretty frequently, and if people call me more often, I'll get the information out there more often. But usually when something big in the news happens around police, we'll get on the air and get the information out there.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, I was going to say something else that's coming up, which is on Wednesday, December 1, which is just a few weeks from now. If people can go up in the Wayback Machine to earlier this year, back in March of this year, shortly after Aaron Campbell was killed, the auditor, LaVon Griffin-Vallade, and Commissioner Randy Leonard introduced changes to our police review board structure. They strengthened a little bit this powers of the staff of what's called the Independent Police Review Division, or IPR, that does the intake when people file complaints, and they restructured the internal police review board that I talked about before that looks into whether somebody violated use of force policies or suggests what kind of discipline somebody should have if they are found out of policy in a complaint. And at the time, we, people in the community, said, well, you didn't talk to us about these changes, and this doesn't go far enough. So if you're going to put this in place, we'll only support it if you also put together a stakeholder committee that allows us to make more recommendations. And they did that. Stakeholder committee met between May and September of this year, put forward 34 recommendations that were supported by the majority, if not unanimously, by the citizen members of the committee. And then the city staff pretty much stayed out of it. One or two members of the city staff, including an aide to Chief Reese, put in their opinions, but that was about it. And we just got a letter back from the auditor where she said, yeah, I agree with this, I agree with this, I agree with this. And anything we did that where we suggested strengthening the role of the Citizen Review Committee, she said, I disagree. Just boom, 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 right down the line. So we have a lot of work to do. So we got to turn people out to City Council on Wednesday, December 1 at 2 p.m. To say, hey, we support this report, and we, when you make the changes, we want the Citizen Review Committee to be strengthened.
Okay. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Our guest on the phone is Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch. We're talking about the official announcement yesterday that Portland Police Officer Ronald Freshour has been officially fired for fatally shooting Aaron Campbell in the back January 29th. And the number to call if you want to participate in this conversation is 503-231-8187. And again, Josh called and basically said, where can we get more Dan Handelman? You know, really, this is really crucial information. PortlandCopWatch.org. Also, Dan and the crew at CopWatch, you guys put out your People's Police Report three times a year. Dan, how can people sign up to get that? Because you can get it mailed to you just like the old-fashioned way and read it in the bathtub.
Yeah. Yeah, they can they can call our phone number, which is 503-236-3065, and leave a message on the answering machine. They can go to our website, portlandcopwatch.org, and there are links to email us, and you can email to the newsletter email address or to the general CopWatch address and say you'd like to receive it. We'd like to have people subscribe to the newsletter. It's $15 a year, which isn't very much relatively speaking, and it kind of helps us keep going because we're all volunteer and nonprofit with a very small budget. So if people want to subscribe to the newsletter or just send a donation our way or whatever, we'll send you the newsletter in the mail.
Now, there are other things that you do throughout the year as a public service, as public services. You do certain public trainings around things. Talk a little bit about Portland Cop Watch and the other things that you do.
Yeah, well, we do a series of three trainings that you're not required to take all of them, but if you want to join the group, you are. We do an orientation to people to let them know about Portland Cop Watch and what we do and kind of the approach that we take. We do a training about what your rights are when you're stopped by the police, and that's a very popular one. We like to be invited by organizations that have a solid group of, say, somewhere between 8 and 25 people that want to learn their rights. So if you want that to be arranged for your organization or for people that you know, let us know that. And we usually bring a lawyer with us to those. And we also do trainings about how to do cop watching, which our name implies that we do a lot of cop watching. We actually only do it a few times a year, but it's going out on the street with video cameras and observing police behavior and taking notes and talking to people in the neighborhood and giving out our literature and just seeing what goes on the streets. And the best day cop watching is a day when you don't see anything happen, right? Interestingly enough, a lot of times we're out there. Even when we're at big protests, we don't see a lot of the stuff that happens. Unfortunately, I think that our presence sometimes acts as a deterrent, so we don't get to capture the misconduct that we know is happening. But fortunately, the misconduct doesn't happen. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
It's a victory when misconduct doesn't happen.
It's true.
We do have a caller. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Your comments and questions about police accountability in Portland. We have a third Joe. Joe, what do you think?
Well, I'm curious to know, what exactly was the decision on the part of the city regarding the killers of Kendra James and James Perez? Now, I don't want to trivialize any of the other killings, but to me they seem to be the most disturbing because it seems to indicate really the worst level of criminality on the part of the officers involved. So what really was the decision there in the long run?
Dan, I think they didn't violate any policy, isn't that okay?
That's not correct, actually. Okay. The officer who shot Kendra James, who, for people who don't I don't remember, was in a car, originally with three men, late at night in North Portland, pulled over by people that knew her, officers that knew her. They pulled the men out of the car one at a time, and when she was left alone in the car, she panicked. She was like 110 pounds and surrounded by three huge white officers, and she jumped in the front seat of the car and started to drive away. Now, they knew where she lived. They had the license plate of the car. They could have tracked her down later. Instead, this officer was like inside the car. He's leaning inside the car, grabbed her hair, which was a wig actually, and fell backwards and shot her on this way down. And he, Officer McAllister, was suspended for 6 months without pay.
Right.
And then the union filed a grievance. An arbitrator reinstated all the hours with back pay for Officer McAllister. So he's out on the force. He's out on the street. Now, Officer Siri, who shot and killed James Jahar Perez, was driving a car in North Portland that they thought was too fancy for the neighborhood, and then they made the mistake of reaching for his cell phone while police were outside the door of his car, got shot and killed by Officer Siri. Officer Siri, rather than face any kind of disciplinary action, which I believe they ultimately found him in policy anyway, resigned from the force and went on to teach Sunday school for a church in Vancouver, I think it was.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And then was hired by the Beaverton police a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still back on the street.
This issue about officers that they may be fired or they might quit, but they keep their police accreditation and get jobs elsewhere, that does become an issue in a lot of suburban communities, I think.
That's right. Very disturbing, because it reminds me of, I'm 60, and I remember as a teenager and a younger adult living in Philly. It's not an exaggeration to say that at that point in time, Philly degraded to a point where the police department was unto itself organized crime. And I'm not saying Portland is there yet, but Portland seems to be headed in that direction.
You know, it's so interesting that Joe brought that up, because, Dan, I've been wanting to bring this up for a while. I'm just curious about what about things that the police bureau has done before 1990. And Phil Stanford, a former columnist for the Oregonian and for the Portland Tribune, who's coming out with a true crime book, I think, right now, that he self-published about a really famous splashy murder case. Now, he wrote a book called Portland Confidential, I think it was 10 years ago, and he was looking at organized crime in Portland in the 50s. And the cooperation of police officers. And I remember when I first moved to Portland in the 80s, Penny Harrington was the police chief, and the mayor was Bud Clark. And there was this big corruption sting around Penny Harrington's husband, who was accused of selling cocaine or facilitating the sale of cocaine at a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown. I mean, there is an older history in Portland of police corruption, but I mean, I've never seen the analysis about officer-involved killings back in the day. And the interesting fun thing about Phil Stanford's book, Portland Confidential, which you can still find, I'm sure they sell it at Powell's, there were national hearings that were televised in the early 60s, I think, and John F. Kennedy's brother, Bobby Kennedy, was the attorney general, and he prosecuted members of Portland's city government, or was it the chief of police, on TV around these corruption hearings. Completely fascinating. And I mean, I never hear people talk about that anymore. It's like it didn't happen.
I think people know it happens. I think there are forms of corruption in the bureau, which include covering up for officers who do misconduct. But I don't know if it runs the same as deep as it did back then. But it's hard to say, because you don't know a lot of things that are going on. We don't know. Like, we know the police had spied on activists for many years. There was a Red Squad, and it transmogrified into the Criminal Intelligence Unit, which then joined the Joint Terrorism Task Force, but was separated out because of our community activism in Portland. And Mayor Potter removed the Portland police from the Joint Terrorism Task Force. But that they've been spying on activists for years, but we won't know what they're doing now until something surfaces. Mm. So a lot of stuff is stuff that you just can't put your hands on. But I'm glad you brought up stuff before the 90s, too, because before we started as an organization, two of the most important incidents that happened, again, were around African-Americans in Portland and the police. The first was when some officers threw dead possums on the doorstep of a burger joint that was owned by African-Americans, which they said was just like a harmless prank, but was obviously a sign of racist intimidation. And it just sparked such outrage that it actually led to the first police review board being created here in Portland. It's called the Possum Incident.
Was that in the 70s or was it in the 80s?
Early 80s,
okay.
I think it was 1981. And then just a few years later, in 1985, there was an African-American security guard who was restraining a suspect, and the police came in and said, oh, here's a black guy doing something bad. They assumed he was the bad guy. They put him in a chokehold, and they killed him. And then as the officers were facing discipline for what they did, the union made T-shirts that said, don't choke him, smoke him.
Right.
As in, right, you know, choking him was, since choking him was so bad, we should have just shot him. And, you know, and so even though there are still traces of that, where the police bureau, the police union comes out and defends officers for shooting unarmed black people in the back, they're not anywhere near as heavy-handed, I guess, and obvious as they were back then. But, you know, a lot of people probably remember just last November, after an African-American 12-year-old girl was shot in the leg with a beanbag gun at close range, which could have killed her, the police union marched on City Hall with everybody carrying a sign with the name of the officer saying, I am Chris Humphreys. And it's like, well, if you're all Chris Humphreys, then we're in deep doo-doo.
Because now, I mean, he's also implicated in at least a small handful of use of force incidents that have triggered tort claims or potential lawsuits against the city.
Well, he's the officer that tackled James Chassis.
Right. There you go.
Probably broke his ribs and caused him to die.
$1.6 million settlement against the city of Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch. We're talking about yesterday's official announcement that the Portland police have fired Officer Ronald Freshour for killing Aaron Campbell. It's not the last word in that incident. Freshour could very likely get his job back. We have one caller. We have Rod on the phone. Rod, what's your take on the whole situation?
Well, I guess two things. One, I wonder if at some point Dan can say anything about psych evaluations for Freshour, if they were done and were they in-house or independent, and what the results were. And then secondly, that not very long ago, five white officers were killed in Washington State as they were having coffee by a very bad actor, and in part because of his experience with law enforcement, a la Freshour types. So I think there are some connections. You ought to look at these things. People have long memories of police abuse, and when you combine that with criminal or other issues, people can act out against law enforcement.
All right, Rod, we are running out of time. I don't know. Dan, we only have like 2 minutes left.
I'll be really brief. Officer Freshour, like all the officers, as I understand it, would have had a psychological screening at the time he was hired, but then not again unless there was a question about his fitness for duty, and he would have had to see a therapist, a psychiatrist of some kind, mandated twice after the shooting incident with Aaron Campbell. But the information that came out of those sessions doesn't get back to the Bureau. It's just for his own mental health.
Okay.
So that's the short answer to that. And then in terms of memories running deep and people having problems with the law enforcement in general, I had this discussion with somebody yesterday who didn't quite understand the politics of that. He's like, we all need to recognize the police officers are human beings. I think that's true. I mean, obviously, it's part of a peace group. I think we need to put ourselves in other people's shoes and see what it's like for them. But at the same time, they stand for something. They have a role in our society, which is not to defend the picketing union workers, but to defend the management against them, right? And so they have this role in society to put down working class people for the ruling class. And as long as that's true, you're always going to have somebody looks at a police officer and doesn't see their humanity or who they are as a person. They're going to see what they stand for.
All right, Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch, portlandcopwatch.org. Tonight, prayer vigil for justice and for Aaron Campbell. That's tonight, 6 p.m. Northeast Precinct, 449 Northeast Emerson. That's near the corner of Killingsworth and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. I've just got to say, honestly, there are whole communities that live in mortal fear of Portland police officers, and that's the truth. This has been Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Special thanks to our engineer, Steve, and Sky, the studio dog. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Political Perspectives.